Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 594. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
There has been some craziness that will not reach these here airwaves until a later date going on that some parties within Stunt Granny have been filled in about more than some more than others, just due to my lengthy friendships with one Jeremy Mays. He got a little more information, but yeah, that one's gonna stay. That's all I'm gonna go into currently. Hey, there's been a lot of wrestling. I just got done with some wrestling. It's gonna be one of those things for me with the new schedule that I've talked about, that NXT and AEW don't really get watched in the same day these days. So Thursday here, we moved the show recording to, and it kind of helps me out because I can't watch Raw these days. I can't finish it out at all. Like, I've got to watch that Tuesday evening to wrap it up. So with AEW fresh on my mind, Chris, the main event was pretty daggone fun, in my opinion, if you like the parking lot brawl scenario. I appreciated that there was far more destruction than anything that on Raw, Retribution, has done at any one time. I guess the hardcore matches aren't always everyone's cup of tea, but what did you think of it? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it immensely. I thought it was one of the best things that AEW has put on TV in quite a while. I've had my issues with this feud so far. I thought it was over a couple of weeks ago when Santana Ortiz beat Best Friends in what was kind of a so-so match, but they rebounded here to really, to finish off the feud in a spectacularly violent fashion, and I enjoyed every minute of it. It was really cool. I believe Ortiz with his body paint reminiscent of I believe that was a Karate Kid homage. I would say.
Oh,
with the skull painting, paint job.
Uh huh.
That was really fun. Yes, the whole thing was excellent. Not cinematic in nature. I mean, obviously they've done parking lot matches have been a thing in wrestling for a number of decades, but this will go down as one of the better versions of that. I really liked it a lot. I thought, once again, it was suitably violent. It was fun. It was violent. It was the blow off this feud needed. With Best Friends, finally getting their revenge. Go ahead.
That was one thing that I did appreciate quite a bit. I'm like, just because I know that you and I have talked about how many times people in the WWE have not gotten revenge the last few years. And it's just like, it was such a habit. I'm like, I was kind of bummed at first, because I watched the show I watch NXT and or AEW on Thursday, just kind of depending. And this one, got the Thursday treatment this week. And I saw the results, I guess. So I knew that Santana and Ortiz lost, and I'm like, I was kind of bummed when I saw the news at first, but then when I did think about it, I was just sitting there going, man, yeah, someone got revenge, and I was like, people need to get revenge. Like, that hurts so many people in the WWE. And it was, I guess, in the long run, like, yeah, I guess that was the right result, because it's still pretty weird that Jericho and Hager are a tag team, so almost the whole Sammy Guevara is the only singles wrestler in their little group there. Why am I blanking on the group name?
Yeah, the Inner Circle.
The Inner Circle.
The Inner Circle has definitely, just really over the last 2 weeks, is you know, pairing off with Jericho and Hager and Santana Ortiz, with no interaction between them and no Sammy Guevara on TV at all in the last 2 weeks. So that's interesting. If I don't know if there's he hurt himself at all during the Matt Hardy match at the pay per view, or if he's in trouble for his recent actions. There are obviously already had to have him suspended for a month over the old Sasha Banks quotes, and then just every time Sammy Guevara has touched Matt Hardy has gotten hurt pretty much. maybe there's his maturity and responsibility.
Yeah, you know, I have yet to see that actual fall.
I have no idea how. He was everywhere last week.
I'm really not on Twitter. It's just not been a I hate Twitter thing for the most part. It's just been more of a practicality out of what my situation is at the current moment. And I'm not gonna read Twitter and drive. That is not a good option.
Sometimes I wish the practicality of my situation was the same. Don't, so you're really not missing out on anything.
Yeah, so, well, no, and I guess what I was trying to get at that point, which, you know, you kind of led with, was it a lot of Guevara's fault with the situation that happened? Like, I guess I don't remember asking you that question last week.
I don't think so in that one. Now the one where he threw the chairs with the legs sticking out at him at Matt Hardy, that was absolutely 100% his fault. but not the spear through the table on the floor from the top of the halo or whatever those things are called.
Okay.
Forklift with a partition on top or something like that, whatever, what have you.
Okay.
Not important.
So, a pallet.
Something wooden was on. A wooden pallet was on a fork. Let they raise it up. Okay, now I remember now. Or was I don't know. That's not important.
No, it's but not really germane.
I wouldn't say that was Sammy Guevara's fault. But as I said, the incident with the chair with the leg sticking out, that definitely was.
I think I actually might have seen that one and not realized what completely was going on. he might have Nia Jax syndrome. We shall see. Yeah, I guess that is kind of interesting. I didn't even think about him not being on last night.
Or the week before.
Yeah, or the week before. So, I guess I just thought that, I guess I did read a little bit of a review, not knowing if I was going to be able to watch AEW just because my DVR has been a pile of garbage, and didn't record AEW last night. But, I did find it on demand. So because I had read the review, I don't know if I was influenced, but I really liked the whole night, honestly, of AEW. Like, I thought it was their most kind of overall comprehensive best show that they've had. So yeah, what did you think of their overall show last night? Well, Wednesday night.
I thought the overall show was very good. AEW has shown the ability to change things when it seems like things aren't going well, and not going well in a very short period of time. You know, not like how WWE can just let things linger and linger and linger before they make any real changes. AEW can seem to have even just one bad show and then decide that they need to turn things around. You know, they did it late last year after the Dark Order fiasco ended an episode of Dynamite. And, you know, this past Double or Nothing, not Double or Nothing, All Out pay-per-view was genuinely considered a down effort for them. But I'm not saying last week's TV was the greatest thing ever, but it was certainly good. And this week's show was much better than that. I think that they are fairly focused right now on their main angles, especially with you know, we talked about that, but Moxley and Archer, they've got a touch point that they can that they're building to with the anniversary show on the 14th, headlined by the world title match between Moxley and Archer. I like the whole deal they did last night with Jake Roberts and Taz linking up their men for a trio for a six-man tag next week.
I did find the cage match or not the cage match, the six-man match pretty interesting. I was glad that they took the time, I guess, to introduce someone new into AEW with this angle. And that's a hell of a nod to get when you're on Team Jon Moxley. For Will Hobbs.
Yeah, Will Hobbs has certainly been impressing on Dynamite. One of maybe the first person to really graduate from doing enhancement work on Dark to become now a player on Dynamite. He went from being, as I said, enhancement on Dark to getting wins himself over other enhancement talent, to really impressing in the Casino Battle Royal at All Out. And now he's getting this really great opportunity to team with Moxley and Darby Allin against Cage, Starks, and Archer next week. That should be a hell of a fight. I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of his work on Dark. So I am, and if he was on the Independence, I was not terribly familiar with him. So it'll be, yeah, I guess I'll be interested to see what he has. You know, it's, I haven't gotten to watch those programs. So, I mean, good for him. I mean, you know, to kind of work your way up over the course of a year is a good spot to be in. You know, because it's been a little over a year now that AEW's been around?
As far as Dynamite, it's still under a year.
Oh, that's right. It's October would be. Wasn't it October sometime?
Yeah, it was October 1st or 2nd, okay. I believe. Of last year, yeah. Which is weird that they're pushing the anniversary show all the way to the 14th. But oh. I guess that's just they had open for it, and it helps because they do now have including last week, they have a steady 5 build to a title match on TV, which, well, no one does that. So no, good for them on that one.
Well, and I do think they've done a decent job of introducing Ricky Starks, but I still think that he still needs a little more cementing of his status. Like I guess he probably will get the chance, because if him and Darby Allin had a real singles match yet,
I do not believe they have. No.
Yeah, because that kind of seems like it needs to come to some type of a feud. It would with the way the kind of level of anger that has been portrayed in that one. I could see that going to some type of, hardcore-ish type match the first go-round. But it almost seemed weird just to have a regular wrestling match in that situation with the level of bad blood. But Starks seems like he has a lot of promise too, and a lot of people seem pretty high on him. Have you seen any of his work before this? Before AEW?
I know I saw him on some of those NWA studio shows from last year, but I can't say that he really stood out to me. I've heard other people praise him to Evans, and he's done well with what they've given him in AEW so far. It's not the most perfect package with him and Cage and Taz with their personalities clicking, but it's put him in a featured spot. Darby Allin's been pushed fairly consistently, so that's a good feud for him. He's gotten to mingle with Moxley on multiple occasions now, so overall it's a plus for him, and he's done well.
So that is kind of a fun little trio match that should have some nice little intrigue to it next week there on AEW. Since we're kind of on them, I guess maybe the other big angle to me, or at least one of them, would have been, let's go with the MJF promo.
Yeah, that was particularly interesting. The announcement that he is considering joining a faction. This has not seen any kind of a storyline like this in some time. And I don't know if they've ever done one where I've ever in all of my years of watching wrestling where a wrestler declares himself a free agent as far as wanting the various factions to woo him. It's always kind of been the other way around, where the factions were approaching the individual about joining them, not the individual saying, "I'll go with the best offer." Well, I'll say I'm fairly certain the Dark Order is is not going to be in the running for MJF. That would not be a good fit.
No, that would be a terrible fit. And I guess now that you say that, they weren't even on the show at all this week, which was probably okay. But that would be a bad fit. Because, honestly, I guess I was thinking of MJF more forming a coalition than him joining one.
That would make sense, but it seems like they're going in a different direction. He absolutely was saying that he is available for being recruited by... any of the factions within AEW. I could see him being managed by Tully and joining up with FTR and I guess John Spears. Or I could see him being a part, because they've done stuff with him and Jericho before.
Oh, it's like, right,
where they're almost too similar to each other. They kind of don't even really like each other, but in a newly reorganized inner circle, maybe MJF could find a home there.
Yeah, those seem like the best fits for him as far as a faction, so long as he doesn't. Yeah, I guess I was thinking of it of, and I guess maybe I wasn't listening well enough that he made it that explicit that he was kind of courting, or, you know, yeah, courting factions or wanting factions to court him. But yeah, because that Eddie Kingston with him and the Lucha Brothers and Butcher and Blade, that one still feels really weird to me, even though they've kind of done their best to show their unity the last month.
Yeah, it's a whole, the whole thing has been weird. I don't, Butcher and the Blade with, even before Eddie Kingston showed up, Butcher and the Blade with Lucha Brothers was just, is just weird. It doesn't really fit with me. I don't particularly care for it. And now we're going to get them feuding with the Nightmare Family with Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. And it's just like, ugh. I'd rather see Kingston with Santana and Ortiz if they leave the Inner Circle. I think that would be the good faction for everyone involved.
If he would just be with the Lucha Brothers as mostly mostly their mouthpiece, but occasionally have to back up the talking in the ring, I think that would be fantastic if you want to go that route. But yeah, throwing Butcher and Blade in there, just like, because I thought at some point that, because I don't know if it was a couple of weeks ago when it was just the Lucha Brothers and you didn't see Butcher and Blade out there for their match, and I'm just like, oh great, they dropped those two idiots from this act, and then after the match they came in and helped them out or helped beat down their opponents. I can't remember exactly the situation, but I was just like, ah, man, they're still there? I was like, why are they still there? I think everyone, that would really work out better for them. But it is kind of funny. I mean, MJF is correct. There are kind of a lot of, like, it would be almost overload for him to create his own faction, given the number of factions already within the company itself.
Right, no, that's true.
I guess you get to have everyone paired off, but even New Japan isn't that crazy about teams. They have some lone wolves out there too. So that one was kind of interesting. I almost thought that enhancement match was almost too short, honestly. One of the bad spots for the ladies, or for AEW, has been the ladies. I definitely think them bringing in Ivelisse has been a positive, and
Oh, no, it has not.
Oh, it is not?
Oh, I wasn't paying close attention either. Ivelisse has a reputation for just, I'll just say, generally being a bitch and being unprofessional. And once again, I didn't notice this during my first watch of the match either. I guess I wasn't paying as close of attention as I should have been, as a podcast pundit that I am. But actually, do you have your phone by you right now, or Twitter right now?
Yeah, sure.
It's the first thing. It's the first thing. It would be the first thing tweeted, or the last thing I've tweeted.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's watch it first. It was. As I said, I didn't notice it at first until people started pointing it out, but Ivelisse just absolutely dead waiting and just basically stopped trying to even be cooperative in the middle of a match taking place on live national television.
Oh my God! Yeah, I can't. That's completely terrible that I missed that.
Yeah, no, I missed it too. So no, I didn't want to sing it so far off the reservation with praising Ivelisse when there's a very good chance that after that fiasco last night, she might not be coming back.
Well, and I was honestly going to lead more into them.
You were going to say the home stretch of that match looked like it was really a fight. Well, because it was.
Now, didn't AEW officially sign Thunder Rosa to appear at their shows?
I don't know. Once again, it's the whole thing with the NWA is weird because they've just started back running shows again, although not the studio show is not been restarted again, but they're doing weekly shows on Fight. So I don't know if she's necessarily signed with AEW, but I was kind of surprised that she was brought back. I thought, All Out was going to be it for her, but no, she's definitely a very welcome addition to keep coming back on AEW. Ivelisse actually is not, even though her and Diamante won that tag team tournament, she is still not under an AEW contract. She's just being paid by appearance.
That's like you said. After seeing that, wow. I've got to think that she is not going to be making another appearance. That's terrible. At best. Completely unprofessional at worst, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I guess I missed that, so I'm going to go ahead and recant the quality of that match, I suppose. Because there was one moment where I thought something was funky during the match, where I thought a cell job looked kind of weird. But I was probably too busy looking at my phone to completely pay attention.
Yeah, that's the trap we all kind of fall into. That's why we're glad that Twitter is here to set us straight.
Yeah.
Pay way closer attention than we do.
I try not to be that bad, but I definitely was tonight. Moving along from the AEW women, maybe that still is not a strong suit.
No, it is still a strong suit for AEW. No.
Since we kind of are working our way backwards a little bit, what did you think about the Hangman Page Kenny Omega saga continuing?
I think they didn't really do much with it. I am so not with this whole Young Bucks acting all badass and kicking, officials and non-wrestlers and throwing money at Tony Khan, who really should have been wearing a suit if he knew he was going to be on TV. I don't know why that bugged me. It did.
Nah, he's the hip new boss, man. He doesn't need to be wearing a suit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just looks like a common production assistant. I mean, I guess if he wants it to be something of a normal guy, great, but number one, he's not, and number two, he's going to be on TV in this role, which was, I think it was the first time they've ever actually shown him on TV.
Oh.
That, yeah. Wear a suit, dude. Just wear a suit.
Yeah, it really would not be hard to bust out a suit, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm not a fan of the Young Bucks part of this. You know, Hangman, just won a simple match over Kazarian, and Kenny Omega wasn't on the show at all, right? There's nothing I missed there?
He just did the commentary.
He was on the commentary for that match. Okay.
Yes.
I didn't even notice. It didn't really make all that big of a deal out of it to me.
Yeah, because the only thing that was kind of weird, I guess, and that's what kind of made the situation weird, is that Hangman almost expected him to be up in the announce booth afterwards or something. I'm like, why would he know who the guest commentators are? Like, they didn't, I didn't feel like they did Kenny Omega's entrance music for him to, you know, like, it wasn't WWE style where he gets his entrance music and he's there. Like, I feel like if they're bringing on guests for the most part, they're just there at the booth when they're supposed to be. Felt like that was the case with Omega last night.
I can't even recall them having him on camera. So that was weirdly done. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still interested in the story. The end of the pay-per-view required a more definite split between the Elite. For how long we've invested in this, and the fact that, you know, that was one of the bigger selling points of the entire pay-per-view. But they're continuing to, with some more ambiguity and, you know, dragging this out. Hopefully the payoff is worth it. You know, otherwise they may have missed their moment.
Yeah, it is going to be kind of interesting to see what exactly happens. I agree with you. Like, I'm not the biggest fan, just because it's just like they've made a big enough deal out of the Jacksons being EVPs of the company. So it just seems a little too strange for them to be attacking referees just for kicks.
Oh, they don't.
I didn't even mean that. I did not. Yeah.
They don't pull off badass. They come off more like children having a tantrum.
It
doesn't work for them.
Just because you dress in jeans doesn't mean you're badass either. And you're not there in your tights.
And, you know, they're all still four technically baby faces who are just behaving like complete assholes. So I'm definitely of the belief that this storyline needs to speed up. to stop caring altogether. So I guess I'm not a fan of the turns of the storyline the last 2 weeks.
I just thought that this week's thing was just kind of weird, just because, like I said, like Hangman kind of acted like he knew that Kenny Omega was on commentary. It's just like, huh? And you know that things are weird. Why would you be expecting to see him after the match or have him come down and congratulate you? Like, you're the one that's kind of been the ass in the situation, so why would you expect that? Yeah, I guess neither of those developments was great.
And why are the Young Bucks so mad? They weren't even in the match.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There isn't that much to say. This was a pretty tag team heavy show here, because FTR versus Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus is the only other thing to really talk about, and there really isn't much to talk about with that match. Like, it was a good match, but it was just, you know, kind of Jurassic Express isn't really enhancement talent, but they're kind of enhancement talent.
in that match they definitely were. I just don't think they got enough in that match, or this is what they have to show right now. I'm not sure. They started off so promising that they added Marco Stunt to the act, which watered it down. Then Luchasaurus injured his knee late last year, and honestly, I don't think he's moved the same ever. He's moved the same since. He's been a stepper too slower for quite a while now.
And it just seems like he's almost shied out of matches more than he used to.
Yeah, it's so promising, and it's a shame to see.
Yeah, because I guess I had seen him wrestle some in ROH before he moved over to AEW, and the guy really seemed very he's kind of one of those gigantic mobile guys, and it was quite something to see when he was really going for it, and he hasn't really been able to showcase that very much in AEW, if at all. So yeah, that's kind of been a little bit of a shame with him. But but there still isn't kind of that much to go into with the match proper. Like it kind of wasn't what it was. Well, you kind of talked about NXT being a mess.
It is a mess right now. Other than the women's division, and it's particularly Io Shirai. I love the Io Shirai Shashi Blackheart match. Didn't particularly love the German suplex on the apron spot. That was just unnecessarily dangerous for Shashi to take.
Yeah.
But other than that, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the Garganos and poor Johnny Gargano and his precious TV. I think that's entertaining. But beyond that, it's a real mess right now, and I have no idea why they're rushing into a takeover. Nor do I have an idea why they needed, if there was going to be a takeover coming up so quickly, why they rushed through having to determine a new champion the previous 2 weeks.
Yeah, that kind of seems like a good place to settle things. And, that was another one. I must have fast-forwarded through some of that information because I did not notice that there was already another takeover. But,
yeah, and it's only 2 weeks away from Sunday. It's on the 4th of October.
I guess I don't even feel like they were talking about it last week, though, even.
No, because they just announced it this week.
So, yeah, that is really short notice for a takeover. Yeah.
And they have just no angles ready at all. They're going to do a battle royal for the women's championship shot, which I know that they've done hints at Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley being the direction, but I almost want to say that this show just seems like such a throwaway. You want to save that for a bigger show down the line. Maybe have, since they've teased that as well, maybe have Raquel win that so that that's going to be a match for Io to kind of beat a monster opponent. But I guess the show needs something to really sink your teeth into. Maybe you go with Rhea. And then there's going to be how do Regal call it? The NXT Eliminator, the Gauntlet Eliminator, basically. Royal Rumble style with pinfalls and submissions, and not a battle royal.
Right.
Lucha Underground did a style match like that that really took off and was really, really good. So maybe that can be good, but they've still just got no. It seemed like Regal was hinting that they haven't announced everyone was going to be in it, or actually the only name that officially was made in it was, I think, as of now, was Kushida. It seems like they're really going to push that, because they did the whole deal with all of the former NXT champions in the four-way Iron Man match that then led to a Cole Balor singles match, that it seems like it's going to be all people who've never been NXT champion. Which seems like a nice idea, but once again, they've just got no one ready.
Oh.
Everyone, it seems like everyone in NXT has lost, you know, key matches lately, and no one's hot.
Yeah, I would, I would definitely agree with that, because, part of it does, I would at least think, stem from the, Killer Cross being out, and I guess I'm still not completely sure if they knew they were losing Keith Lee that quickly or not, with the way that he lost.
I feel like they would have known for at least a little while. They already had new music ready for Keith Lee, new gear.
That's true.
Video package. Yeah. So yeah. Obviously, no, Killer Cross was not supposed to be out for months.
Losing your two top guys at one time. And that was kind of the worst part, too, is that, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit, both of us kind of agreeing that Finn Balor would freshen things up the most. Like, Keith Lee was still a fresh face in the NXT main event scene, at least. And Karrion Kross was, too. And, in one fell swoop, all that newness got taken out, and you really are left with a vacuum of power in there. And it seems like these other things happen too, where one guy I can think of offhand is Killian Dane, where he could have some type of singles career, but he hasn't gotten any type of push, and now they're putting him in this. I do think it could be beneficial in the long run, but putting him in this odd couple with Drake Maverick for the time being.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got no interest in him. they threw him out for so long and didn't do anything with him. He hasn't done anything all that impressive either. Yeah, it's something, and it definitely looks like Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong are staying heel, and Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole are going babyface.
That does. I did find that interesting when. Because who did Kyle O'Reilly help save?
He saved... Oh.
Was it just a backstage?
Atlas.
Jake Atlas.
Jake Atlas, yeah. He saved Jake Atlas from attack by Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah. I did think that was an interesting development. I should have put two and two together like you did. That Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly are changing things up. And I think we've talked about that. Those guys just in general need some type of freshen up. And even if two of them stay heel and two of them go babyface, that will, I think, help everyone involved with that faction. Like, they've really done everything that they could do. And it's kind of time to move along to the next iteration of things. I honestly would not be surprised. I thought that Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole put on some great singles matches back in, honestly, at this point seems like the day when Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly were in Ring of Honor together.
Yeah, absolutely. And before that, they were a hell of a tag team as well.
So that would be fun. I guess I would not be surprised. I feel like the WWE has recycled storylines before. I would not be surprised to see them kind of be a unit for a while and then have them have a breakup in feud similarly as they did in ROH. And I would be here for that. Yeah, and I'm trying to remember which hijinks Fish and Strong were up to this week, and it's not coming off my brain.
They
were
down,
in the handicap match.
You just
That's
brought
right.
It up.
I forgot. Like, I guess as. But.
You're the one who brought it up. I couldn't care less about Killian Dane and Drake Maverick.
I forgot that that's who their opponents were, to be completely honest with you. I was more. I guess I'm more. Yeah, because I. Well, and I'm trying to guess. Like, you also put what's his name, Damian Priest, in with the North American Championship, and unless you want to replay the whole Keith Lee double belt situation, like, he's another guy that could kind of help fill that power vacuum at the top a little bit. But I almost think that you need him to lose that championship already too. Which isn't ideal.
It doesn't look like that's where they're going. No, no.
No.
I would have just happened last night, but which once again, another big loss for Thatcher. So what's that? There's another heel to that's not hot heading into whatever this gauntlet eliminator match is gonna be next week. I'm worried that they're gonna go with Velveteen Dream. but who knows? There's just no one sticking out right now. unless you go back with one of the three guys who was in the four way who we've been featuring for 2 years straight now.
Yeah, the top of the card is definitely a mess at the current moment. And, yeah, because I guess I do at least enjoy, and I'm not surprised that Fandango and Tyler Breezango are going to continue being tag team champions down there. But, you know, it's always one of those, even in NXT, like, I don't feel like they usually have tag teams lining up to take on the champs. Because
not at some time. No, the tag division has definitely suffered over the last year or so, and you know, I guess they're having good matches, but it's a struggle to get me to care about Fandango and Tyler Breeze in 2020 in NXT.
yeah, I guess I still have some residual enjoyment of them. But it almost seems like you need to have them working with, like, young talent at this point. You know, just because there's still so much of the talent in NXT that it's just like, Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong don't need more seasoning. You know?
No, they absolutely do not. Yeah,
you know, so... I think I'd like them more if they had something to do like that, but they don't because there aren't any young tag teams. Because did one of the guys from Indushare get hurt, or did something happen that they got taken off TV?
I haven't heard anything about that. You know, Malcolm Bivens hasn't been on TV since then. Yeah, I'm definitely not on top of that story. I have no idea.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, they just need any fresh faces to work with. Like, I think that would be more ideal for them, as far as the championship reign goes. To, you know, again, truly kind of help someone. In the younger area, but again, NXT hasn't really displayed any tag teams that are young at this point. Like, I mean, I guess Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel are, but yeah, there isn't anything beyond that. So,
no, not really.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that about kills NXT. Honestly, just because it was not a terribly exciting show. I will say that, again, because I'm not necessarily watching things in a timely manner, I was very interested when watching Raw to see what happened in the Asuka-Mickie James match, because my phone was being blown up by botch posts. And,
Who the hell sent you botch posts?
Well, Google just alerts me to different news stories about wrestling now. And, so I forget if it was Wrestling Inc. or, one of the various, companies that they go to for news stories. And, and yeah, that match, was really ended in, one of the strangest fashions I may have ever seen. Like, the look on Mickie James' face when the referee called for the bell was one of the funniest things I think I have seen this week. The look of genuine shock and surprise on her face was outstanding.
Yeah, no, it was, and it was a genuine look of shock and surprise. I guess the referee being overly cautious during, stemming from recent events, particularly on AEW with Matt Hardy, believed that Mickie James had suffered a legitimate head injury when she was only selling Asuka's kicks, and called the bell.
And that's the thing that I thought was really strange about the situation. So, like, I'm sitting there going into that match waiting for this big incident, and there are a couple of kicks to the head where I'm like, oh, okay, this is where it's going to happen. And then he lets it slide, and Asuka's kind of wrangling Mickie into the Asuka lock, and that's when he calls for it, calls for the bell. And I was like, man, that seemed like a really strange situation to be calling for the bell. Like, I guess I expected it to be on a strike, and it was not at all. Like, I thought that that was extra bizarre. Like, if the referee made a genuine mistake, like, that still seems like a weird time to make a genuine mistake like that to me.
Yeah, no, it was very... Now, that was, you know, Mickie James was supposed to tap in the Asuka lock from everything I've read upon the subject.
Oh, okay.
But after significantly more struggle than that.
Oh. I am not surprised by that news, I suppose. Because, but I guess I wasn't surprised that they said that they might use this to get a little more mileage out of Asuka and Mickie James, and I would be up for that. I thought that they had a solid match. Like, I don't know if they were necessarily given enough time to have a great match, but I definitely was enjoying what I saw up to that point.
Yeah, no, it definitely could use to see more of that. I feel like it'll be better than whatever they got cooking with Asuka and Zelina Vega, who just has no credibility in the ring. She's not bad or anything, it's just that she just does her manager interference spots, and she gets beat quickly whenever she actually wrestles. I don't get this sudden push.
Yeah, that is one of those things that's kind of head scratching. Because I was thinking the same thing watching. I'm like, there is like the heel is always supposed to have an inflated ego of themselves, but like you said, like the facts kind of bear out that she has not been good. So why should she be getting any type of title opportunity?
Your
There's
guess is as
no
good as mine.
reason.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely no reason.
So,
I am definitely not feeling Clash of Champions at all. This is a C show. Not this ain't this isn't a B show. This is a C show going on. We've gotten to that point in the network era where there are absolutely C shows.
Yeah, there. 'Cause what was that last? What was the name of the one that they? 'Cause they did. Did they? Was it SummerSlam? And then they did a show the weekend after.
Yeah, payback.
Payback. Yeah. Oof, man. I ended up watching both of them, but I just happened to be available to do that. Like, I can definitely see myself taking off one of these C shows if I feel like it. 'Cause is Clash of Champions this weekend or is it next weekend?
Next weekend.
Okay. Well, then I might actually have the free time, which would be amusing enough. Other things on Raw that maybe were interesting. I guess Braun Strowman being the biggest, baddest bully on Raw Underground so far. What do you think about his big confrontation with the new guy whose name I have not remembered yet?
Dabakato is his name. No, I
Davocado.
mean it's interesting. It's something to do with Braun that doesn't involve him running back after the Universal title, which is fine. Raw Underground exists in this kind of different world where the barrier between Raw and SmackDown doesn't necessarily exist. That's fine. Braun showing up and just killing everybody in the Underground was a, it's something for him to do. It's kind of the best use of a guy like him at this point, and to set up and build to him and Dabakato next week. No, that's good. I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit. Like that's the Raw Underground stuff is really even though they have still in no way explained why or how this happens and why even these guys get involved in it other than to get camera time. But yeah, it's been pretty fun. Like that was another one too, where when I was watching Dolph Ziggler earlier, I'm just like, man, you can really see why he was a good amateur wrestler when he's in these situations. And it's just like, ah, man, that's kind of nice to see. Like, it's a real change of character for old Dolphykins. He might be he's not going to find the magic of what 2012 or something. But anything that makes him more enjoyable, I am for. Because as much as they put him on TV, I at least want to tolerate someone. And he has at least moved into the being able to tolerate and appreciate, which I will take. What the? Oh, well, I guess it is kind of interesting. I suppose that it does look like Ivar is going to be out longer term here. Are we going to have seen Eric's last match now that he got beat down by Bobby Lashley, not just in Raw Underground now, but also within a Raw ring?
His prospects don't look very good. Not at all. They definitely are. I don't believe that they're going to see anything in him going forward, so... Yeah, he's got to hope for a quick recovery for old Ivar.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough one, at least for him. But what are you gonna do? You know, it kind of sucks. But hey, that's what happens when you do those dives. And I guess, is there anything to talk about with the Hurt business? Since they did get brought up here, anything more to say on them? Because it just kind of seemed like they were more just kind of concentrating on solidifying Cedric Alexander's spot within the business this week. Well, and they. I don't know. Do they quell the rumors that the Hurt Business may be in league with Retribution this week?
I wouldn't say so, since they took them on.
Oh, that they could still be together is a unit?
I don't believe that that's it at all.
Oh, okay. I think I used a double negative, which caused the problem. That's all. I needed a clarification on my end. So yeah, I guess that was kind of the maybe put to bed one rumor as far as what Retribution is in it. It does seem like they're maybe kind of trying to identify some people for it now, would you say, for Retribution?
Yeah, I would say so. At least I'm starting to see who's in under the masks. Dijakovic is definitely one. Mia Yim, Mercedes Martinez are pretty noticeable.
Yes.
Theo Maddin, I think, is a fairly noticeable as a for the group to have a black man who is about the same height as Dijakovic, not a little taller. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, you kind of have a limited pool to choose from. Yeah, it does seem like the same people have shown up because. For a while there, you could kind of tell that the shapes and sizes of the people were varying from skit to skit. And I feel like the shapes and sizes have settled down into a more noticeable core of people who are in them.
And Dijakovic with the voice distortion is playing the leadership role, at least on screen so far. If there will be a more recognizable face who is revealed to be the grand leader of the whole thing, we shall see. I saw some speculation. I did definitely see was that Adam Pearce could be the one who actually is the one who keeps letting them in, and he has his own grievances. He's just made to look like a fool. Every week by the superstars of the WWE who show him no respect.
Yeah, like that was one thing this week on Raw that really kind of hit me. I'm like, man, Adam Pearce has really, like, I've started to make fun of it for the last 2 or 3 years about how many times he showed up on screen from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania and comparing it to sign pointing. But I mean, he really has, like, I can't make that joke, I think, this coming year if he maintains being, he's the first on-air authority character in quite a while. Even if he doesn't have any real authority, and definitely is neutered by anyone that is, in his purview to get something out of, whether it be a contract signing or otherwise.
And that would essentially be his motivation that he was a wrestler for 20 years and instead and but they didn't want him as a wrestler. They put him in a suit. You know, Vince treats him like an errand boy. The superstars just have no respect for him. Yeah, it could work if they if they really go with it.
Yeah, it could because like I said, I guess this week it really hit me. I'm like, man, he has really solidified himself as an on-air talent, and that would make a large degree of sense if they decide to go in that direction. That he is somewhat of a mastermind, or at least an accomplice, with Retribution. So yeah, that would be a pretty fun reveal in my books. And I guess I'm kind of glad that they're kind of keying down on Retribution. I guess the idea's always been okay, but you could just tell that they weren't putting enough effort into this group to really help identify them. And now they at least seem to be kind of pinning down their real characters and moving forward, which is good. And I mean, it's really not going to hurt to have some new blood on Raw anyway. That's a lot of new blood, though, all in one group.
Yeah, I mean, but once they pare it down, the group doesn't need to be much more than five, maybe 7, 10. I'm not really sure because it's going to be a group of mixed of group of men and women. So.
Oh yeah.
We'll see where they go with it. I guess I'm kind of winging it in my own mind right now.
And I guess another big topic would be Seth Rollins yet again taking on Dominic Mysterio, this time inside of a steel cage. There were a lot of shenanigans involved. Buddy Murphy was told to stay away. Or just Murphy was told to stay away. Murphy did not listen. Almost cost Seth Rollins the match and then kind of saved it for him, too. So what are your thoughts on this continued angle?
I like the cage match a lot. I thought the stuff with Buddy Murphy, Murphy was done well. Maybe getting a little long in the tooth with Rollins and Dominic at this point. I don't know if there's much more to go with it, especially if they're just, you know, especially after a cage match, which followed a street fight.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like even though they're behind Dominic and really impressed with him, it does not seem like they're let him beat Seth Rollins impressed with him. This is the third time now that Seth's pinned him.
And I that seems pretty reasonable to me. You know, like, I don't think Dominic should be beating Seth Rollins at this juncture.
No. He should not. But once again, with Ray on the shelf for another month or two, I don't know much else to go with it. Although they did do the angle after the match with Seth beating down Murphy and Ray's daughter checking on him. You know, I don't believe for a second that we're going for with a romance angle. That would just so not work. She's only 19 years old. She doesn't really. She's not a performer. Murphy's, you know, a good wrestler, but not much of a promo guy or an actor. So I don't think that's where we're headed. But I could see the Mysterio family taking pity on Murphy from here on out.
Oh, yeah, and I guess it wouldn't. I wouldn't have a problem if Dominic and Murphy ended up being a team in the long run.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Yeah.
You know, starting Dominic off on a tag team is probably a good idea. They definitely, you know, I mean, they've never really put faith in Murphy. Like, he's had some spots to shine here and there, but I don't feel like he's ever gotten that sustained push that would keep him even kind of in that Hurt Business mid-card area at this juncture. You know, he's just kind of there, and moving him into the tag team probably would be the best thing for his career, at least as far as keeping him on TV goes.
Yeah.
Any other big things to get to on Raw? Because, I mean, the main event was interrupted by Retribution, so there isn't much to talk about to me with Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee.
No, not much at all, no.
And, you know, the Riot Squad kept on their role. I guess Kevin Owens and Aleister Black is maybe one to go with. Any thoughts on those two?
Nah, nothing. Nothing particularly sticking out at me with that one.
Okay.
Basic match. Kevin Owens won. I don't think the feud's over, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, then that means it's bell time, beer time. I will say that I'm drinking one of the more delicious beers that we have bought during the quarantine era. It is from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, their Clear Sky series, which is their cream ale, is cream sky, is just the plain. But this one is cherry cordial. It has cherry, cacao, and vanilla in it, and it is delicious. It's almost a sour, but not a sour. And their Clear Sky base is fantastic. I guess I have always had some affinity for Genesee cream ale, and because it does kind of have a little bit different of a mouthfeel if you get a cream ale, and this one kind of has that nice quenchability that comes from a cream ale. So yeah, if you're in the state of Ohio, you can now get Wolf's Ridge Brewing, and I would highly suggest this one. Chris, just order it to some P.O. box in Toledo and go and get it sometime. So with that, I am at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever you happen to listen to us. Do us a favor and bump us up. And we will talk to you next week. Good night.
Later.